Welcome to episode 38 of Leadership Amplified. It's great to have your company. The podcast showcases exemplary leaders and leaders who are doing wonderful things to make leadership easier, more satisfying, but also more meaningful. And I'm speaking with Sudha Sharma today, and she's going to take us on her journey to all of those great things. Sudha is an accomplished global leader with an impressive 25-year track record in leading global companies through transformative periods and facilitating cultural change. As a first-generation immigrant to New Zealand, Sudha's unique background has shaped her perspectives and aspirations. She has developed a remarkable ability to perceive challenges and uncertainties as opportunities, fostering a mindset that allows her to navigate through ambiguity effortlessly. Sudha's own journey of personal transformation has equipped her with invaluable hands-on experience to assist leaders and individuals in effectively navigating the complexities of change. Welcome, Sudha. It's great to have you here. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Hey, thank you, Karen. It's always a pleasure talking to you and having a wonderful conversation. Looking
Lovely,
forward to it.
lovely. Yeah. So let's start where I always like to start, and that is by hearing a bit about your own leadership story. You've had a number of different sorts of roles in different countries. So tell us all about that and how you got to where you are now.
That's a great question, Karen. Being a Toastmaster, I've done a few reflections on, what shaped me and where I am today and what were the factors that influenced. So maybe I will start from a few things that really shaped my early childhood. I grew up in a military middle class family, which meant that those days the resources were very limited, limited money. We had to really be creative and do more with less. And growing up in that sort of environment made me think about everything I did. I looked at opportunities and tried to tap into whatever came my way and tried to, I took things a bit seriously to learn. I was curious. I leveraged the teachers and the connections I had. I ended up being the house leader in school. And, I was women's leader in university, did political science and MBA. And all through those years, when I reflect back, it was actually people. There were so many good people throughout my life who tried to help me, whether it's teachers or friends or we don't term them mentors, but there were a lot of good people, kind people who helped me through that journey. And it's funny that when I look back, my first job was selling cell phones to Americans. I worked for AT&T, selling cell phones over the phone and trying to influence customers. So even though it was super fun and gave me a lot of money, I was stoked by learning more about customer service and what really matters to people. What are some of the things that I need to listen to what customers say and then how to pitch my selling and all of that. Those were really very early years in my life. And I would say in many ways it helped. And then I moved to management consulting firm for a good 10 years of my life. So from there, again, getting into a company like Accenture, I was suddenly I saw this big corporate world with many people, smart people, and great resources, access to a lot of learning. I worked through some amazing people, and leveraged the frameworks, learning opportunities that was available through that. And I had multiple roles. I put my hand up to do things. I enjoyed, it was always like, I like to go in the maze and figure things out. Solve problems. So, for me, it was very exciting to actually go into an unknown and figure things out with a group of people. So I did many roles through my 10 years, both local, global, and worked in different areas. But most part for me, there were two drivers. One was helping people, working with people. And soon I realized in the corporate world, results really mattered. What really mattered was, the outcomes. And I also realized that those outcomes, we won't be able to achieve the best outcomes if we don't take care of people. It's about how you get there equally matters. And that's when I started to focus more and more on my connections, nurturing relationships, working with people, understanding people, and what people's concerns are, and if what change we are trying to make, where does it fit in? And so that was an amazing learning journey. And then came a point in life when I thought I was soaring in my corporate career, we decided to move to New Zealand.
Yeah.
And
So there's a big
again,
international move, yeah.
yeah, and totally. I was from young age, I was very risk I was a risk taker. I was very curious. I wanted to give things a go and try new things. So, it was a easy decision from that point, but it wasn't necessarily very easy. So what it meant was, we had to move to a new country, get accustomed to a lot of things, new ways of working. And, but I thought, if not now, when? And then we moved. But, the first, I would say 2 years were very tough, let's not kid. But then, it really helped me to understand people better, working through different cultures. I had global and Asia Pacific roles before at Accenture. It really, helped me working through different kinds of people. And I'm more happy now. I think I made the right call to move geographies, and it's an immense learning experience. I was so resilient throughout that process, and COVID hit, and it wasn't necessarily easy. But yeah, in a nutshell, I felt these were some big moments of my life that really shaped who I am today.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting, and it comes out in a lot of the stories that I hear from leaders, is taking on leadership roles at school and university is often a precursor for leadership roles later, in your career. And so I think you talked about three things that I really pick up on that came from that early experience, and one was that adversity. And kind of using adversity in a way, in a positive way, being curious and open to learning, and then you've just added that sort of risk-taking, prepared to experiment and see other things, and then being a learner. And isn't it so very interesting how some of those things that we call emotional intelligence, that kind of openness, are more important to leading and adapting to change in our modern world than we perhaps give them credit to.
Oh, absolutely, Karen. I think that's actually changing when you look at the new world, post-COVID world. There is no playbook how to lead a team. You can't necessarily, rely on all the frameworks or strategies that we have used pre-COVID, and also considering the new generation, Gen Zs, and and so on. I think for me, as my mentor puts it, Connor O'Malley, the way of being influences the way of doing. And I think in one of your books, you talk about people decide about you before deciding about your message, right? So I firmly believe that to make the change happen, the leader needs to first work on themselves. That self-awareness is a big piece. And fortunately for me is, I think it's just the kind of people that I met, and I was just open, and I think to a large extent was not shying away from asking for help, Karen.
Oh,
There was only
yes.
limited resources. We didn't have a lot of money, And I had to go and ask people, and I would do that shamelessly, you know. And to learn, I was hungry to know more. And it, if it meant it annoyed few people and they still helped me, so be it.
Yeah, but that sounds like there's also a bit of a clarity of your focus, as well as I suppose a determination, perhaps a need to achieve that was in there.
Yeah, look, I think that's again, family background kind of pushes you there because the l resources were limited. I really wanted to make something out of my life and really change something for myself, but also people around me. I think there was a big purpose there.
Yeah. And here it is being played out in the role that you have today, where you're the change lead. And so I'm really interested in kind of shifting to the present now
Sure.
in the conversation and learning. I mean, one of the things that continues to strike me, and notwithstanding COVID, but change has been around for a long time. We see different kinds of change. We can talk about different speeds of change. But, for most of my working career, which is plenty long enough, we have been talking about change and the need to change and help people to change. But it doesn't necessarily seem to be any easier to do, or it's not an easy thing to do. We have to keep calling it out as a thing to do. We need to manage it. And so I'm really interested in, what you know about what we need to do to make change happen. How do you influence people to do things that are new, that they don't necessarily know how to do, that they haven't been involved in, the decision to do? Yeah, so tell us about how you work with change and help others make it.
Totally, Karen. I think, as you rightly put, changes the only constant. It was always the only constant, not just today. We are all growing old and we are all learning and family is growing. And I think it's two things where, when I think about it. One is for me, change, leading through change is leadership. They're not two different things. And in that there are two big components, right? One is leading self through change, managing oneself through change, and then managing others or the organization through change. I think when you think about leading self through change, today the leaders are needing to actually take some time out, do self-reflection, and think about how they show up and what is the impact of how they show up has on other people in the organization and how they influence others. So, which means self-awareness is such an important exercise the leaders of today need to do to have better influence. How many of us have really making the time to do it is something to reflect on. And I think there is a saying that says people are meaning-making machine, and meaning through language and emotions. And as leaders, how are we reacting to something? That's how our teams and the people that we interact will react. So if I'm showing up very excited and hopeful and, with some forward thinking, that's the level of engagement I'll have with people that I'm interacting with. So I guess for leaders, the first thing is really around self-awareness, making time for reflection and thinking, getting feedback. Just being humble enough to, work on oneself and keep that learner attitude. And then the second piece is around leading the organization or the groups or teams through change. I guess once we are, we are all work in progress, and it's okay to, to be human. But at the same time, the teams are looking for clarity. Anywhere you go, all the people in general are looking for clarity. Where are we going directionally as a company? What are our priorities in the company? What are we working on? Why are we working on something? Why is this change happening? So there are some simple questions people want to know and clarity people want to know. And I think as leaders, it's very important to get the why right for a change. Why are we making that change? and what it means for the people that they are impacting or the company, we need to be able to articulate that in a very simple term, very in a simple way, for people. All people are looking for is why are we doing something? People are less interested in the what, Karen, to be honest. People are looking at why we are doing what. They're not very interested in the what, but they want to know, so how is that what going to impact me? So
That is really interesting, actually. You've made me think. I mean, my reflection might be when I think about the change that I've led and been a part of in the past, don't we spend a lot of time focused on the what?
100%, even today, I think we are so much focused on what priority do we need to get, what outcomes do we need to get, and rarely question or rarely steer the group to think about why are we doing this, what is the bigger picture or what is the bigger purpose. And partly in the corporate setup, Karen, it's also about the pressures of P&L, pressures of profitability. And sometimes it forces the leaders to have only tactical lens and not strategic. So there are many elements that leads to that behavior, but I guess people like myself can help steer the group to think differently and tap into the why.
So that busyness makes sense, and perhaps change is always, there's a bit of loss in it. I have to give up something to do something else. But what do you think it is that keeps leaders focused on the what rather than the why? Can you kind of, do you have an explanation for that?
On, I think the number of factors. One is, it's a hard thing to do to dig
Well, that makes sense.
in. It's a hard exercise. It requires digging a little deeper. In bigger corporate, what it means is you've got to spend some time defining your why. And there are many ways to do it, Karen. It's not rocket science, right? But I think it is leaders' focus and wanting to do that. And again, this is where how you lead, the way of being comes into play. And the way of being is your values, your philosophy, your principles. And some of these things are so important to define that why.
That it's actually interesting. Can now it comes back to me. I suppose that in some of my work, one of the things that I'm very strongly focused on is helping people to identify their purpose, which is their sense of why. And that's, often something that's always been with them. Maybe for you it's something around change and helping people make change and influence. But one of the things that strikes me, very regularly is that people really struggle to identify the why. Partly, I think it's a new thing to do, so it's not so familiar. It seems perhaps a bit self-indulgent to some. But also, I think people try to encapsulate too much in it. And so I want my purpose to be everything because everything about me is important. And yes, it is, absolutely. But purpose is often a very neat, easy statement, and when you get it, you know it. So I wonder, can we apply the same to the organizational purpose context?
Oh, absolutely, Karen. In an FMCG setup, that's the industry I work in, it's all about our consumers and how relatable, are we making our consumers' life better? It's as simple as that. But it's again, requires a bit more thinking and working, and it needs to be inspiring enough for larger organization, when you communicate that, cascade that, is it inspiring for our people? But at the same time, is it simple? Is it actually meaningful for the company? Not just today, but is it, so, is it evergreen?
Enduring, yes.
Enduring the times, right? Yeah, I guess I think in that way, the company that I work for today, Suntory, the purpose is very, very clear. It's all about customers and, our consumers. And there are some real clear, focus on leading with purpose and performance.
Well, I interrupted you a little bit there. We were talking about that second part of leading change, which is really focusing on others, and providing that sense of purpose is really helpful, rather than prioritizing the what. In terms of leading through others, what are your other, I guess, tools or approaches that you work with? Because you're also trying to affect change and help leaders across your business to make the change. You don't necessarily have the line accountability that they have. You are much more of an influencer, I guess, across the
Absolutely.
organization. So, for someone influencing change across the organization, how are you working with others to do that?
That's a brilliant question, Karen. I'm like a director of a movie, and my actors and the lead actors are all the leaders that I work with, really. I guess, a couple of things. Most of my coaching conversations with very senior leaders really focuses on how do we better influence other stakeholders? How do we build partnership so that there is more buy-in for the change that we are trying to make, and not just buy-in, but also someone who is an advocate of that change and encourager or endorser of that change. And there are a couple of tools that's very helpful that has helped me, and I'm pretty sure it's not a something I invented, right? There are so many tools that are available. But something that's very helpful is, number one is the power of asking beautiful questions. This is by Dr. Warren Berger or Borger, I guess. It's a beautiful model, to use. And it's really about, how do we understand, get the leaders to understand their stakeholders by asking some pointed questions, again framing that question. It's a bit of a coaching, because as you are C-suite executive, it's so important to frame things in an inspiring way for people that you deal with, so that there is the influencing works. So power of, asking beautiful questions, could as simple as, what are your concerns? What really matters for you? And when it comes to a change, it's really the concerns. People, if we are trying to influence others, there are some underlying concerns, and people don't necessarily talk about in a group setting. And that's when my coaching to the leaders is, try to do one-on-ones. And it's so, you often talk about warmth, Karen, in all your work. That's so important, to tap into that warmth for our leaders to build that connection as humans, understand what they're going through, because all you know is the underlying cause is totally something different. And if we get to that, then the person is ha happy to meet us halfway. Yeah, so I think the asking questions is a great thing. I think the other big piece around influencing leaders in terms of coaching is really today, you talk about this in your book, flexibility. The workload is a challenge, Karen. It's an industry challenge. People do multiple projects and programs, and resourcing is a challenge. Getting the right skill set is a challenge. It's just about, helping the teams prioritize. Again, by asking questions or looking at outcomes, why are we are asking questions around why are we doing something? Is it really helpful? So working through different leaders, to help prioritize and focus on what really matters. And I think the third tool is really around communication, consistent communication. One is that the initial piece of connection, getting to know the person, having the warmth and asking the questions. And then it's about prioritization. Once we know people's concerns, you work through that. And then the last piece I would say is really leveraging the communication tool that we have and being consistent with it, whether it is a face-to-face communication or email communication, but consistency is what really matters to nurture a relationship. People, I think research says that people forget, remember only 6% of what we discuss. In a week's time, people forget what's been discussed. There's so much going on in an organization, especially in a FMCG industry. So, repeating messages 7 times is when it becomes a top of mind, and that's like backed by the research. So I guess these are some of the tools I keep talking about in terms of maintaining consistency, building a connection, and help teams prioritize. But also keeping things simple. I totally believe in simplicity, Karen. There is so much information around us. Information has become a commodity today, and it is such a distraction, I'll tell you. So it's how do we just stay focused in the zone of focus and keep things simple? It is a challenge.
No, that's fantastic. I really like that. One of the things that people often say, so I'll just ask you about that second area in terms of the workload being a challenge. And I really like what you say, that just taking the time to sit down with people and to prioritize things. And I know of a leader in an organization where they've got huge change agenda, and his people talk about this process. One of the things he does in the first thing he does in every conversation they have, apart from, how are you and what do you need from me, but what are the priorities? What are you working on? What needs to change? And he's very clear about restating what they are, and will help them to rearrange what they're doing. And it gives people permission, doesn't it, not to feel like they have to do every single thing
Totally,
on the
totally.
to-do list because it's way too long. And I think a lot of people get hooked into, I need to do everything anyway,
Oh,
and
totally,
just keep doing
Karen.
it.
Yeah, when I think about in my early 20s, saying no was so hard. I think there are different set of groups in the company who would just say yes, even if it means, it's burning them out. And I think it takes years of experience to actually learn to say no. And it's not taught in school. We are, expected to have answers and, expected to say yes to everything.
That's
So
right.
yeah, it's a
Especially
bit of a
high
change.
achievers, it's very hard. So that's where it's great when the boss can help with the prioritizing. And the flip side of that, people often talk about, well, if someone's coming in to give me priorities, are they micromanaging me?
That's a good point. And I guess it's very contextual, isn't it, Karen? I think as a leader, you've got to know the individuals you're working with or groups you're working with and read the room and read the cues that's coming from the individual. I'm for sure I can't survive under a micromanager. Micromanagement is not my cup of tea. And I guess people will react, people will resist, and people might avoid getting into a meeting with those kind of leaders, or try to not to complete the work. So I guess it's very important for leaders to understand the context and get to know the people that they are dealing with.
That's right. That's right. And if they're asking those beautiful questions and they're thinking about making the connection with each person, then that goes a long way in making, I guess giving you a better image. But also, how much you need to prioritize for any particular person.
And that also reminds me of psychological safety, Karen. And as a leader, it's imperative that we create a safe environment for our people, and they really have the freedom to do whatever is the priority that they're working on, but having a freedom, within the fence, so to speak, to do it. And that psychological safety is a key piece, I would say. Again, it's something reflects back to the way of being, impacting the way of doing.
That's a very nice phrase. Because I mean, what is a bit of an aside, but the best leaders I've seen can give really, really tough feedback, really lay it on the line, but they do it with warmth and they do it with care. And I think that perhaps is an example of this way of being, really sort of determines the way of doing. And it makes so much difference to people to how your message lands.
Totally. Yeah. And on that, I think that feedback thing, it's also so important to be just real and authentic, Karen. And sometimes with, it's okay to say things as is as a leader. People get it. People get it. We have to build that connection, get to know that people. But sometimes we do have to show some tough love, and people are okay because they know that the leader cares about me or my team. And then it's not only questioning, but also providing the support. So what's stopping you from not being able to deliver something? So how can I enable you with that support? And I think those are some questions that leaders can ask to, demonstrate warmth and support.
Yeah, lovely. Lovely. So to come back to influencing then and the focus on change, it's important for change. What other messages might you like to share about how to be influential?
Look, I think we talked about this in terms of how we show up really matters. Intent really matters because actions follow intent. Assuming, I think you do talk about assuming trust. It's so important. We assume trust that, and trust the team that the team will deliver, or the team will be open to this. I think we need to have that intent to get into any change. And of course, how we show up, the language. I mean, language is such a subtle thing. The choice of words makes a huge difference. And people actually listen carefully. They notice their leaders, what they're wearing, how they're walking, what they're saying, what words are they using, and why did they use certain words? All of these things get, a leader is under a lot of scrutiny, so to speak,
That's
from their
right, very
team.
much on the stage.
Totally. And then I think it's just being self-aware, but at the same time just being themselves, and being aware of the leader's impact on others, because a lot of leaders in the pressure situation, when it comes to pressure situation, is when your leadership really comes through. And it's very easy for a leader to, lose temper. It's very easy for a leader to lash out on team members, or things are not going their way. And that's the point I would suggest the leaders to take break, re-energize, whether it's a day's break or micro break, like stepping out of the office and going for a walk. Whatever works for that individual leader, it's about taking a break from that moment and regrouping thoughts, coming back, and reminding themselves that they have a huge impact on people in how they show up, because people follow leaders, Karen. Leaders, whatever walk the talk the leaders do, that exactly you will see the next in line doing the same behavior, same ways of working. And it's so important. Leaders have the power to change people's behavior, which means they have to walk the talk.
That's right. And if they don't like the walk they're getting from their team, they might reflect on why they're getting it.
I know. Oh,
Where does it come from?
that's so important. And also encouraging feedback culture, I guess, Karen. As a leader, there was this concept long time ago, in Accenture. There was this concept of reverse mentoring. It's okay for a leader to actually get to know a Gen Z, or someone who is diverse or different, to get to know and learn from them about things and gain some insights, what's going on the ground. I guess that those are some of the things that'll help.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing your story. And we've had a great conversation around change, and I can see how, that has some very early beginnings for you, that journey. So as we finish up, I'm interested in just hearing from you in, terms of perhaps a summary or any other insights in terms of the advice you would give to leaders about how they manage change successfully.
That's a very good question, Karen, and often a question that's asked and or explored. I guess there are two sides to that. One is, leaders recharging themselves, making sure they're reflecting on how they're showing up, and because that has a huge impact when they are leading for change. I would say I have this greater appreciation for structure, Karen. I was not necessarily a structured person growing up, because as you can imagine, I loved going into a maze, finding my path. So definitely was a structured person. But I have this greater appreciation for structure because there are two things. One is leading change leadership. The other is change management framework, meaning delivering a program with change management activities, which is what is the structure that I'm talking about. Applying a structure to delivering a change is very important. A couple of things, that comprises that. It's essentially your stakeholder engagement and management, communication and coaching, and your training. Usually a big change, whether it's process or technology or any kind of change, goes through changes in ways of working or processes. So a big piece of that is training. So that's a basic structure that is that'll be really helpful to apply, leading themselves through change. And I think the last piece I would say is leveraging the network, or what I call as partnership, peer-to-peer partnership. It's so important for senior leaders. Usually it's a suite of leaders, right? Suite of executives going into different decision-making forums. It's so important for the leaders to have allies, making sure there is partnership and that's managed consistently, and people are able to endorse the change that the leader is making in their area.
That reminds me, I got quite keen on this whole idea a few years ago of horizontal leadership rather than vertical leadership, because the impact of strong peer relationships across an organization is pretty profound. You get a bunch of peers, especially at more senior levels where there's, quite often a bit of competition. If you turn that around and you turn that into a really strong collaborative network partnership, as you talk about, I think, organizations could really release a lot of value from that. So I'm really pleased to hear, you've reminded me of something I thought
I mean,
was a good
that's the
idea, and now
toughest,
it's
that's
great
the
to,
toughest thing to do, Karen, and it's really tough to do, I must tell you. But it's we have to keep trying and trying different strategy, what works for that group. And again, having that common North Star, the purpose that brings the group together, is helpful in that situation.
Do you have any last comments you'd like to make in closing?
Well, all I would say is for people who think change is hard, is, change is the only constant, and give things a go. What could go wrong?
And plenty could go right.
Exactly. We always think about what could go wrong.
We do. Well, Siva, thank you so much for your time and for sharing a bit about your background and your early years and development as a leader. Great to hear that story about the curiosity and that determination that I heard coming through there, which is obviously serving you very well for the work that you do now. So very much appreciate your time and insights. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Karen, for this opportunity, and love your work. We'll continue to follow your work.
Oh, that's so kind of you. Thank you.
Thank
Bye bye.
you. Thank you. Bye.